You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And being the fourth Wednesday in the month, we've got the people in from Hutchison Legal. We've got Steph, Harry and Grant. We've got the big honcho today. Grant's come in to say hello to us. Welcome to you all.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Don't just nod your heads. Steph didn't say anything.
Hello. Thank you.
G'day, Al. Thanks for having us, and hi to your listeners.
No worries. Now, Grant, we wanted to, we had a question.
Now, I just want to clarify one thing, Ellen. Is it the fourth Wednesday of the month, or is it the second? Because we might have come on the wrong week.
No, it's the fourth.
No, it's the second. No, it's,
oh, so it is.
Oh, look, I don't ever want to correct you because I know where it can go. It doesn't go well for me.
I think I'll just go home. Well, sorry about that. You are right. It's a second.
Yeah, people might think that Christmas is already gone.
Oh, man, what a it's a bad day. Anyway, let's get over it. It's a second Wednesday.
Do you want me to do it for you?
Yeah, I think I'll go home.
It's great to see you.
And I've got another 2 hours to go yet.
Oh, no, you've been working too hard, mate.
Anything could happen. Anyway, we had some inquiries last time for you to have a look at about refunds, whether you know, what the obligation is. Some stores will take it back even without a receipt, as long as you can prove it came from them. Others insist on a receipt. Others insist on it in a certain time period. So Steph's going to tell us a bit about it.
So in terms of refunds, some stores may have a sign saying no refunds. So this is an issue because If they've got a sign up that says no refunds, that implies that there's no refunds under any circumstances. And there are...
Is that legal?
No, it's not. So there are situations in which you will be entitled to a refund. So they are allowed to have a sign that says no refunds if you simply change your mind. That's all right. That can be a store policy. But if it's... comes down to the product not working properly or being as described, there are protections in place for that. So there are situations that a store or business may have to give you a refund. So they can't have a sign that just generally says no refunds.
So as long, but if it's fit for purpose, then you're not entitled to refund it, are you? Just because you change your mind or you think, oh, shouldn't have spent that money?
No. If you just change your mind or if you find it cheaper somewhere else, that comes down to a store policy. So they might have a policy where you can only get store credit or something like that, and that's an entitlement that they have. If there's a major fault with the product, if it's majorly different to what's been described, or... then that's a situation where you would be entitled to a refund. They may offer you a replacement. If it's a minor fault with the product, again, they may offer you a replacement. If it's, again, minor, they may offer to do repairs for you. If they can get that done in a timely manner or provide you with a suitable replacement, then they... not in a position where they have to give you a refund.
Can they, under all circumstances, insist you take a credit, or if it's faulty, can you just say, no, I don't want my money back? I want the money back.
Again, that comes down to what I was just talking about in terms of the major or minor issue with the product. So if it's a situation where they've got a replacement product easily available for you, or if it's a minor fault and they can, within a timely manner, get that fixed for you, then they would be in a position to ask you to accept that. If that's not something that they're able to offer you, that's when you'd be able to insist on a refund.
And a refund, not necessarily take a credit.
Yes.
All right, we'll take a quick break and I'm sure we've got plenty to talk about.
Little girl, damn, my mom, she was. Yeah, let the little girl, damn, my mom, she was. little girl
FM 99.1. You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And now we're back to the legal hour, being the second Wednesday of the month between 1 and 2. We've got Grant, Steph and Harry. Steph, the other part of the question that we did have was about gift cards. Now, some of them seem to have dates. Others don't have any use-by dates. What's the difference? And can they put a use-by date on them?
Yeah. So the laws have changed in the last couple of years in regards to gift cards. So prior to the 1st of November 2019... gift cards only needed to last for 1 year. So that's still applicable. If you purchased a gift card prior to that, it would have been expired by now. So for any gift cards purchased since that date, they need to be valid for at least 3 years.
So they can put a three-year limit on them, can they?
Yes, yeah. So the time limit has gone up, but it has to be at least 3 years. And it does need to also state the expiration. If there is an expiration date, it's got to state it on there. And it can't have any extra fees attached to using the gift card. But that's generally what applies to most gift cards that people will be receiving this time of year. But there are some exceptions. Do you want to hear about those?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
So the couple of exceptions that there are in terms of when those rules don't apply to gift cards are if it's a card that can be topped up. I think there's maybe some of those Visa cards that you can give people, things like that. If you can top it up, these same rules don't apply. If it's part of if you got the gift card for free as part of a promotion from a store or a business, that also doesn't apply. So they're allowed to put a time limit on it then. And that's the same if you're an employee of a business and they've given you a gift card as part of their employee rewards, they can also put those kinds of restrictions on them as well. If it's temporary marketing, I guess similar to if it's given to you for free for promotional purposes. And same again if it's part of a customer loyalty program.
Fair enough. All right, so that answers that. Now, Grant, you're going to tell us about We're going right back to 1973. I wasn't born then.
Okay. Well, if we're going to play that game, okay. Then I can't ask you the question.
Like a dream.
So the Weekly Times just came out with an article today, and I just thought you'd like to know that back in 1973, a loaf of bread, including delivery, would have cost how much, do you guess?
Oh, I don't know. Don't ask me questions like that.
20 cents.
20 cents?
For a loaf of bread, and probably some people used to complain that was too much.
Yeah.
But then, remember you used to get those footy cards in there as well? But anyway, then if you adjust that...
No, I wasn't born then.
If you adjust that 1973 price with inflation that's occurred since then, today it would be selling for $2.30. But actually, normally it's around $4.40.
I was going to say, it's not $2.30.
Yeah, so that's gone up in real terms... Not just with inflation, but that's gone up. Whereby, if you're talking about something like butter cost about 500 grams, 63 cents back in 73. So that'd now be $7 adjusted for inflation.
I'm not sure how much butter is. It's not $7.
No, it's not. It's gone down, $5.40.
So no wonder the farmer's complaining, not making any money.
Well, I think there's pressure. There's downward pressure in some areas. So a dozen eggs, 76 cents back in 73. And that would be $8.40 adjusted for inflation, but it's actually $5.40 for a dozen
eggs. So it's gone backwards too.
Yeah, it's gone backwards. So think of all these poor farmers. It's how do they... So when you look at cost of living, it's they take a basket of commodities, not just individual commodities. A six-pack of beer. Now, you wouldn't know what that would have cost in 73.
I don't drink.
Well, it was $1.42 for a six-pack.
Well, you wouldn't get it for that now.
Well, it's adjusted for inflation. That means it would have been $15.75, but it's actually... $23.50.
So that's well exceeded the cost of living. Yeah.
Well, there's a bit of tax that goes. They've got what they call the sin tax, you know, all these things. So the same with a pack of cigarettes. I bet you couldn't guess what a pack of cigarettes, 25 cigarette pack, would cost 49 cents.
And now they're very expensive, aren't they? Because there's a lot of tax on that.
Yeah, $5.44 CPI adjusted as of today. But... they're selling for $48.10.
$48?
You wonder how people can afford these things.
Well, I knew a guy that smoked two packets a day.
Yeah, well, that's an expensive habit.
It's over $80 a day.
Yeah. Okay, well, here we go. This one, I think, there's two last ones that I think go to the entertainment industry. So an AFL grand final standing ticket.
All right.
Back in 1970 was 80 cents.
Yeah.
Adjusted for CPI would be $11 now.
Yeah.
But what are we paying? $155.
Fair income.
Now,
that's well exceeded inflation. Yeah. You couldn't...
I think they pay the players a bit more. It used to be, back in the 70s, it used to be you were still a school teacher and you'd turn up and...
I knew a couple of footballers that worked in timber yards.
Yeah, yeah.
During the week.
And that's how they'd do their exercise during the week.
Bowens used to employ a couple of... footballers, I think Harvey, Robin Harvey. He worked there in Bowens for a while.
Gee, you wouldn't want to injure yourself that way. The coach wouldn't be happy.
That's probably true too.
Well, here's the last one: a concert. Back in 1964, the Beatles concert. You'd pay up to $3.70 for a ticket. Adjust that for inflation, and you come out at $62.60. But Taylor Swift concert tickets. That's coming next, that were bought this year, between, and I don't know where you get this ticket, the $79.70.
That'd be standing outside the arena, listening over the fence.
And it's up to $1,249.90.
Sure.
So just think those Beatles, they were inexpensive compared to the...
And I reckon I saw Johnny O'Keefe and a couple of those down at the old House of Stoush in... And I reckon they were probably about a couple of dollars to see them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, well, Midnight Oil, you know, you could see them in Ringwood and they weren't too much.
No.
Yeah.
Well, people like
play at the pub.
I don't want to bore the younger ones here, but people like Normie Rowan and a lot of those groups, they could, apart from Saturday night dance, the only gigs they could get, a lot of high schools used to hire them for lunchtime entertainment for the kids. And until they made the big time, it's all they got paid.
Yeah, yeah. It's a tough life.
Got to take a break with back and forth.
Local voices, local events. Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley.
You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back, and we're talking to the team from Hutchinson Legal. We've got Steph, Harry and Grant. Now, we haven't heard from Harry yet. Now, I don't want to be rude and ageist, but Harry's not long been in the legal system. So, obviously, he hasn't just come straight out of uni. So, Harry, well, you might have just come out of uni, but you've been around for a little while longer. So, what's your background coming into the law?
Yes, thanks. Thanks, Alan. Hi, listeners. Yeah, I was born in 1965, but pretty well. No, it's okay. I need to declare that and make it up front so it makes everyone quite comfortable about where I'm coming from. So, yeah, basically I graduated from RMIT University in 2022, in November. Yep. But prior to that, I started my legal studies in 2016 and pretty well, probably for the last 30 years or so, I've been working as a structural engineer and construction director for property development companies in the commercial area.
What would take somebody from commercial properties into the law?
Okay, well, that's a great question. Well, first and foremost, I think I came to the realisation probably about 15 or so, 20 years ago, that the question was posed to me as to, you know, what have you put back into your community? And this pretty well came from a meeting that I had with some rostrum people. And, you know, one thing sort of led to another, and sort of a self-reflection on that basis sort of, you know, put me on the spot. And I said to myself, well, yeah, what am I doing for myself and for the community, particularly to bring back? So the opportunity presented itself to get into law, 7 years ago or so as a student, and do it part-time and do whatever I need to do to graduate, and then sort of make a decision, and turn my mind to putting back into the community.
So what section of law I'm not going well. Grant's put me off.
That's all right.
What sort of phase of law are you involved in? Because I know at Hutchinson Legal, they've got a lot of specialists.
At the moment, what I'm really being dropped into the deep end is looking at victims of crime and assisting them through the Victims of Crime Assistance Tribunal. And pretty well basically involves, you know, listening to victims who have been, you know, exposed to crime, and how we can best support them through what the government can offer them as well, and to put in their applications to seek some, you know, financial assistance and therapeutic assistance as well in helping them bridge the difficult moments that they're experiencing, and to move ahead and forward in their lives as well.
Because they're often at a real low time of their life, aren't they?
Absolutely. And, you know, one thing that comes out of it when you start to speak to a lot of these victims is that, sure, it shows sort of the lowest that, you know, people can act in front of their other human beings, but it also shows the resilience that these people have to rise above it, and, you know, to have the guts to reach out and ask for some help and to acknowledge their, vulnerabilities. Yep. To have the right people to steer them on in the right direction. That's all they're really needing.
Which is terrific. In the last hour, you might have heard it, we're doing an interview with an organisation that's RU Bogmate, which is set up mainly for farmers and people in rural areas, particularly with mental health.
Yes.
Grant, having segued into that, you want to talk about mental health issues too.
Well, I want Steph to, so Steph can update you in terms of...
Well, that was a flick pass.
So Steph's got this great article from the Law Institute Journal, so that's the lawyer's article, and just giving you a quick update.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you, Grant.
That certainly got bypassed.
Yeah, a good handball, if I can throw in the only footy reference I know.
Yep.
So I can just have a bit of a chat about the changes in terms of the Mental Health Act and the fact that there's now an act in place called the Mental Health and Wellbeing Act. So some changes that this has brought about is that in the past, when people may have been up against or may have needed involuntary treatment, the healthcare providers had a bit more discretion in terms of whether or not they had to consider the principles in the Act when thinking about limiting people's right to make decisions for themselves, and particularly involving decisions if they wanted to make a decision for themselves that involved risk. So me, myself, I'm entitled to make decisions regarding my health and my mental health that might be risky for myself. But when you are in a situation where you're receiving involuntary treatment, that's when it's a bit more scrutinised if there's a risk to yourself. And so that's what the changes are about. In part, in that in the Mental Health and Wellbeing Act, they're now actually requiring practitioners to consider and give proper weight to the principles in the Act when it comes to deciding, making decisions about whether or not somebody can have a say in their treatment. And I think that that's a really important thing when we're talking about taking away someone's rights, but it's also about preserving their dignity and making the process happen in the least traumatic way possible, which is also part of what the Act aims to do. There are also changes in terms of the accountability. So there's now a new body as well called the Mental Health and Wellbeing Commission. That's an important part of any change of law, is to make sure that that law can be enforced. And when it comes to making sure that the laws are working the way that they're supposed to, we need to know that if you've got a complaint or if your experience wasn't the way that it's supposed to be, that there's somebody there to ensure that that's not going to happen in future.
Keep an eye on what's happening for you.
Exactly. I mean, we love making laws that are great in theory, but if there's nobody there making sure that they work the way that they're supposed to, and making sure that, and, you know, it's not even necessarily about bad intent. Some of the issues with the laws in the past were that there just weren't enough resources for medical practitioners to be able to make all of the considerations that they now legally have to. They just may not have had the resources to be able to say, I've got a situation that's, you know, on the more extreme end, and how can we deal with this in the most dignified and compassionate and...
And to make sure both sides are protected as well, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. But But with the changes to the law and with the changes to the process of accountability, hopefully that's starting to change in terms of patient experience.
All right, we're going to take another quick break and we'll be back with more.
It's a real rockin' rhythm that's sweeping all over this land. I'm a rockabilly rebel from head to toe. I gotta keep a rockin' everywhere I go. Everybody join us, good company. Be a real cool cat, be a rockabilly rebel like me. Your feet, shaking in shoes, boy, it ought to make you feel wow. If you can't dance, we're gonna show you how.
I'm a rockabilly rebel from head to toe. I gotta keep a rockin' where I go. Everybody join us for good company. And be a real cool cat, be a rockabilly rebel like me. I'm a rockabilly rebel.
You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And I'm talking to the team from Hutchinson Legal, Steph and the big honcho, Grant, and also Harry. Right, we always get a few questions coming in, and this one has got quite a few aspects to it. We want to know about what the legal situation with CCTV. Now, we all thought that you could only have it on your own premises facing in, but then some people are saying, well, they watch the news at night and there'll be a news story about either an accident or a car that's gone racing down the road and that. So that's been taken off people's CCTV. So that means those cameras aren't facing in into their property. They're facing out. They want to know the first thing, A, what are the rules, the legal rules, not what moral rules are. Also, if you're allowed to have it out into the street, what stops you from having it peering into next door's house? Because it's the same process. We had one question which I'd probably discount a bit, but I'm here to ask the questions, not to moralise about what people think. And we've had someone say, well, they know that they when they go for a walk, there's a camera that goes on the red when they walk past it. So it's facing out the street. And under their civil liberties, they don't believe that should be allowed to happen. Now, personally, I don't care who photographs me walking down the street, because if I'm doing wrong, well, I deserve to get caught. If I'm not, well, I couldn't care. But that's been raised, and we'll ask that question. The other thing is, too, about the CCTV footage. If there's an incident, can the police cut demanded, or is it up to you whether you hand it over? And if not, can they get... now, I don't know why you wouldn't hand it over, to be honest, but again, I'm not here to judge. And if something happens next door, are you morally... Well, you're morally obligated to hand it over, but is it legal? Can you be made to? Because someone said, well, I mightn't like next-door neighbour. Well, I just said to them, well, if it came the other way and you had the robbery and they had it, you'd think you'd want it. So if you just have a look at the whole lot about placement, is there a legal obligation when you're recording this stuff to keep it for so long, or you can record it today and scrub over tomorrow? So if you could just have a good look at that for us, please.
Thanks for that, Alan. And I suppose not answering it, but just a quote. Just remember Google Maps. They go around with their trucks, yep, and they take photos all around the place and so that you can have a look at a street and see the landscape. Yep. Of course, they had some problems when they were taking photos, and somebody could look up their house and find a car that shouldn't have been there, and maybe some relationships taking place that they didn't know were taking place. So all sorts of privacy information.
I've seen some funny things on Facebook where they've caught people doing stuff they shouldn't be doing.
Anyway, but dealing with privacy a different way, can I deal with the issue?
You're
of
flicking that one off.
Yeah, I am. I don't know what you're up to. So the Victorian and Commonwealth privacy system have similar structures, and they seek to regulate things. They try to define what the private information. They would not cover this. The thing that you've discussed. So this is about organisations, often organisations with a turnover of more than $3 million, or groups that have opted into being regulated by this. Right. I think everybody's required to have a privacy policy, but are you caught by some of the privacy principles under the legislation? So the Privacy Act defines personal information, not as you being seen as you walk past someone's house,
yep,
but it's personal information. It's information or an opinion, whether true or not, whether recorded in a material form or not, about an individual whose identity is apparent or can reasonably be ascertained from the information or opinion.
Great. So is there anywhere we can go to find out what is held on Alan Collier?
I bet there's a lot held on Alan Collier.
I didn't expect that.
But can you go? I think you'd have to go to each of the organisations. I don't think there's a central registry. And I'm glad there's not a central registry. Yeah, today there's a central registry. That's when you're in real trouble. It's amazing. If we Googled, forget the mapping business, but if we just put your name in, I'm in my car and I push a button and I say somebody's name and they'll say, well, what do you want to know about that person?
Yeah.
It's amazing what you can get via Siri. And so often, and then they won't show me until I stop the car, because you're not allowed to read that type of stuff, but it's all stuck in. Often I'm just saying call so-and-so, but they think I've asked for information about so-and-so. So.
And I, pardon me, I was told that, well, I was going to go with it, I was told years ago by someone that you should Google your own name at least once a year, because it could pop up that somebody else is there as Alan Collier.
There probably are more than one Alan Collier.
No, but what they're saying is someone else could have, if somebody else could have created an Alan Collier based on me.
Oh, okay, with your photo.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, like that American general that seems to be interested in quite a few Australian women. Sorry. Sorry if I said the wrong thing. There's a number of romance scams that use this American general, this poor guy. They've got his details, and they make out that he's keen for their affection, and if only they could send him a little bit of money. I don't know why he needs money.
You've got no idea some of the pop up on my Facebook. I must be a very attractive man for some of the women that pop up. I bet there's some Russian guy.
Okay, let's bring you back before you go to Valentine's Day. Let me bring you back.
I'm not going to Valentine's Day. And neither are you.
No, I'm not. So if you want to review a decision or have something about a privacy complaint, you first of all have to establish that somebody was holding your personal information, and you have to show that they have not acted in accordance with the Act. And once the privacy breach is established, then they have to then there may be consequences such as, well, what type of consequences would you want? If somebody breached your privacy, what would you want, Alan? You'd want an apology, wouldn't you?
You'd want an apology. And yeah. Can I just ask you then, while we're talking about this, if an organisation gets information about me, whatever it might be, is there a limit to the time they're allowed to keep it, or can they just keep it forever and a day?
Oh, this is you've asked a good question. Put that down. Can I just say the Privacy Act will now cover from the creation of the or the collection of the information through to its destruction. So that's for those organisations. But a little GP that doesn't, you know, it may be different for a little organisation. I mean, for instance, you probably have some personal information held here. Probably at least about you. They'd have your name, address, telephone number. Yep. They'd have a few things about you. Yep. They might even have it about Steph or Harry soon. Who knows what you guys get up to in your black ops. So, but effectively, you need to be responsible with that information, and we're getting to the stage where we have to hold him. If somebody comes, we have to often prove that somebody's identity. If somebody comes in and says, I want to sign a mortgage over my property, and it's not their property.
And that's happened, hasn't it?
It absolutely has. So we have to get proof of ID and know that we're dealing with, you know, Joe Bloggs is really the Joe Bloggs who's the owner of that block. But I've seen a case where somebody with a not a common name finds that a judgment's entered against their property and the sheriff wants to come and sell it, and it's just the same name as some fraudster out there who was...
What about the case where a family member comes? I've heard that, where a sibling has put... Or, yeah, the child has put... signed up against to sell the mother's home.
I think we actually saw it where the mother did it to the daughter. Well, anyway, let's just say hypothetically, it can happen both ways. It can happen both
yeah,
ways. But you're right. A child can do it. And one of the things.
I don't want to stop you.
So let's say the daughter's name is the same as the mother's name, because let's make it really easy. So they can turn up with an ID. Yeah. How do we prove the ID of the first
person? That's what I want to ask you. What's your obligation as a solicitor or a legal attorney to prove that that person is the person who owns the house and, in fact, they've got the right to do that? What, as a legal practitioner, what's the legal right for you people?
Good question to put down, Steph. But I think, we have huge obligations placed on us. And so something that used to be straightforward, you could come in, sign a guarantee or sign another document, didn't cost that much. Yep. Now we have to, the obligations placed on us require us to go to various lengths of verification of identity, either by a third party or ourselves. Yep. And then we have to hold that information. Because if so, what, that's the question. How long do you have to hold it for? Yeah. How long could it take for them to sue? So it could be 20 years. A mortgage can run for 20 years, plus you want to hold it for another six. So that's ridiculous, the idea of holding something for 26, or a mortgage can go for longer. So there is an obligation, but how do you secure it? In the old days when it was a paper file, easy. Who's going to get in there and look at that file? But when everything is... you're paper light or paperless, and everything is in there in the system, then how do we guarantee that if somebody comes and hacks, that we protect that? So it's a really difficult thing. Or it's, could something in an email get misappropriated or sent somewhere else? So we have an obligation. So let me run you through. So as you said, if something goes wrong, normally people want an apology. And obviously the organisation should amend its conduct to ensure that they don't repeat or continue the harm, and they can require some undertakings from the organisation. They can also get some injunctions at times. So, and they can make recommendations in terms of how to address that in terms of the tribunal. But similarly, there can be compensation. Now, compensation has generally not been that much. So the question is, what's it worth? I know, not naming anyone, but Prince Harry, he thinks he's because he's not listening. Or is he listening this morning?
Not this morning.
Okay. So he thinks his information, if it gets out there, is, you know, it's should be worth a pretty penny. But the amount, if Alan Collier's medical records came from a hospital that you popped into once,
they're not worth much.
Well, the amount claimed. So there was one person who sought $3.5 million because they said that a medical practitioner had released information about a former patient. Clearly shouldn't be done. In the end, and that was an unusual case, they got $39,420.
Greg, can I just ask you another question?
Yep.
Supposing an organisation has got something about Alan Collier and I find out about it and it's wrong.
It's wrong, yeah.
What legal right do I have then for, A, first of all, to compensation, but B, to make them get rid of it? And they say, no, I'm going to leave it there because I think it's right. And I say, well, it's definitely right, not right.
The question I'd ask you is, first of all, do you want to correct it? Because you're improving their records by telling them what's the true situation. So let's say you'd been...
careful.
Let's say not Alan, but another person was caught speeding and, you know, or 0.08 or something, and that information, and it said that that person, and they got a fine of... you know, suspension, loss of license, and a fine of $200 or whatever it is.
Yep.
But the truth is that you only got a suspension for 1 month or something. You've got to ask yourself: is it worth correcting the record?
No, that's not. But I was thinking of something worse than that. I mean, obviously.
Oh, what? Well, let's put it towards Harry. Oh, okay, Steph. Okay. Let's do it to one of the people that aren't here today.
No, I was just thinking if it, say you were, there was an Alan Collier convicted of a crime, a heinous crime or something, but it's not Alan Collier, and somehow some organisation has got that on their record saying this bloke's no good, and you find out about it, and you go to him, you say, well, that's not me. What can you do about it?
Well, so newspapers would all carry a dossier of different information so they know if a name comes up again, they've got material. And yeah, it'd be worth getting that right before they publish about you. Yeah. But remember the cases where they put the wrong photo. And they had to apologise, and I think they... The thing with an apology, don't just accept that when these media outlets say, we'll print an apology, because they print it on page one and the apology's back in page 97. You want
about that big.
You want an apology commensurate so that it should address the same people who've seen the original article.
Yep.
And so and newspapers hate to print apologies. It is not... They like to be... We're always right. So, but I can see you're looking at the clock. Do you want to take a pause?
No. We've still got two more minutes.
Okay, well...
Take no more breaks.
So in terms of other compensation... So normally when somebody goes to VCAT about privacy stuff, normally the amount's about $1,000. Although recently in this year... somebody got it up to $9,000. So except in extreme cases what we're dealt
it's
with...
It's not a lot of money, is it?
No. So, but who knows where it's going from here? Is it going to go up? It's probably not going to go down, a bit like the Beatles tickets. it only goes one way, doesn't it?
Did you go and see the Beatles?
I don't know how old you think I am.
You threw it to me.
No, the Beatles were a bit ahead of my time.
Before your time?
Yeah, before my time. So, but I've seen black and white photos of it.
It's huge. I saw it. I never went to the concert, but I saw them when they came out the balcony at the Southern Cross.
Now, we were talking to somebody that interviewed them. Well, we won't say who, but some people have... people that are still around in radio today.
Oh, no doubt. We're not that. It wasn't that long ago. You're trying to make us sound as though we're old and doddery.
It was black and white.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. It was a huge day. I remember that.
You actually do remember them landing on the
tarmac. I was only a little kid, but I can remember sitting in front of the TV watching it.
And were your parents telling you don't go down that path, Alan? It's mass hysteria is not for you. Or did they say, go for it, Alan?
No, they didn't.
Yell and
that.
Scream. Twist and shout.
Guys, I've got to go. I can't believe how quick the hour's gone.
Seriously, we should make this 2 hours.
We should.
I'm only kidding.
thank you for coming along. And, Grant, thank you for Hutchison Legal being involved with us the last... Well, it's about 3 or 4 years that we've been involved with this show.
Is that all? Yeah.
I've only been here doing this for about 5 years. It's probably 5 years because... Yeah. Anyway.
But we enjoy your time, so thank you. And to you and the listeners, Merry Christmas.
And to you all as well, and everybody at Hutchinson Legal also.